The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Love you more. Am I recording?
You're recording.
All right. Welcome to Beatles vs. Stones Year by Year. That's what we're calling this podcast. I'm Justin Cox and my friend Ryan Page is here. You'll hear from him in just a second. A quick disclaimer before we jump into this thing is that, like, baked into the structure of this podcast is that it's going to make some people angry because we know people love these two bands and we love these two bands. And we're basically debating who had the better year each year. That doesn't mean that I think the Rolling Stones had a bad year on a year that I'm representing the Beatles or vice versa. But, we're going to commit to the cause and go all in on it. So, Ryan, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, just that if you do get angry about it, good, because that means you care. And that's the one thing I'll say about this music is that we do care about it.
Exactly. And your local library and various streaming services have many documentaries and books about both of these bands that can give you every little perfect, accurate, fact-checked detail. This is not going to be that. This is an exercise in, like, the way human beings talk about music and fans talk about music. And it's like an insane run of, like, these two huge important bands kind of having this overlapping prime of their career, and we're going to talk about it.
But we are not music historians by any stretch of the imagination, and my background with these two bands, the amount of research I've done is I once half watched the Beatles anthology while I was at work at a video store, and I've watched the YouTube video of the Rolling Stones Rock and Roll Circus about 800 times. So I don't know if that makes me an expert on these two bands, but I'm going to say it does.
You're an expert in my eyes, and I hope to earn that status as we go. What I'll say in addition to that is, like, we are listening extensively to this music before each week and thinking about it and everything. And so we'll make good use of your time. With that, I want to ask you a question, Ryan. Let's see.
Okay, let's go.
You have no idea this is coming, but
I'm already feeling argumentative. So
yeah,
great.
Don't cheat. But what's the most highly streamed Beatles song on Spotify? Take a guess. Don't cheat. Don't cheat.
The most, I won't look. Okay, I'm gonna guess Let It Be.
Nope. It's Here Comes the Sun at 557 million plays. All right, Rolling Stones.
Rolling Stones. You can't always get what you want.
It's Paint It Black at 498.
Paint It Black is the number. Wow, okay.
But, like, part of me wonders if some of this stuff has to do with, like, soundtracks and I don't know, like, certain, I don't know.
I mean, I love Paint It Black and that's a cool song, but I wouldn't have guessed that was their most streamed song. That's interesting.
Yeah. I know. I was actually surprised by both of those, but also kind of get it.
Yeah. Here Comes the Sun makes sense when I think about it for a second. I don't know why. I guess Let It Be. I guess those two songs, because I just always assume that, like, kind of sad bastard music is always really popular on Spotify. So I don't know. That's where I was going with those guesses.
Like, probably not to, like, overthink it. Like, just think about the first plucked out notes you hear on both of those songs. They're just, like, immediately recognizable to the point of being, like a child would recognize those.
Yes, absolutely.
And something we'll do here and there throughout each of these episodes is splice in some songs like we are going to do right here with these two. So at the end of this episode, what we're going to do is we're going to take turns picking years between 1964 and 1974, and we're basically going to map out what band we're representing in each year throughout the duration of this podcast. So we haven't preset that. We both love the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and we'll know that at the end of this. But in the meantime...
I want to interject just real quick. Is that I feel like coming into this, I can really quite honestly say... that I don't know that I love the Beatles or the Rolling Stones more than the other. I don't know that I could tell you at the beginning the totality of their career. That's where I'm coming to this project from.
Yeah, I get that. I don't know. The way that I've described it to myself is that I almost think the Beatles are better. I have to acknowledge that I think the Beatles are better, but there are a lot of times I don't want to hear the Beatles and I basically can listen to the Rolling Stones anytime. And so then I don't know what that means. That's like, so are the Beatles better if that's the truth? I don't know.
Well, you know, that this really like takes us straight into the meat of this argument. And as I've been like pondering and thinking about the comparative strengths and weaknesses of these two bands, not just on a yearly basis, but over their whole career. I've spent a lot of time ruminating on that. And I feel like one of the key differences, okay, so yes, I will grant you that the Beatles, from like a catalog standpoint, from maybe even like a musicianship standpoint, they have the upper hand. But the other night I was watching Martin Scorsese's movie that came out before Taxi Driver, Mean Streets. Have you ever seen Mean Streets?
No, I bookmarked it the other day though. I was curious about it.
It's okay. It's like one of those movies that it's got everything that Taxi Driver has in it, just not quite as good. But there's a scene in that movie where they introduce Robert De Niro's character at the beginning of the movie, and it's like a slow intro walk into a bar that's played to the Rolling Stones in the way that Martin Scorsese can do that, and it just is so cool. If you were playing a Beatles song, you would not have that cachet of I'm trying to show a guy walk into a bar and make him look cool in slow motion, and now I'm gonna play Please Please Me, or you know, maybe that's a terrible example, but that to me really sums up what the Rolling Stones bring to the table and what they that swagger.
They're just sort of cooler. And what's kind of interesting to think about is like, there's all this conversation around like what the Beatles' arrival meant. And it's like kids going crazy and teenagers going crazy and parents thinking like, what the hell is going on with this? And so in that weird, from that perspective, the Beatles were wild and the devil's music and stuff. But then the Rolling Stones were like, almost were framed deliberately as like a bad boy counter to the Beatles, who especially in retrospect kind of seem like cute nice boys, you know.
They do. It seems, you know, with 60 years of hindsight at this point, almost 60 years, they seem pretty tame. These songs are not, it can be difficult to get in the mindset of listening to, you know, P.S. I Love You, and imagining the 1960s dad like throwing it in the fireplace. How dare you?
Exactly. Well, so the way we're going to do this podcast is we're going to take the next 10 episodes after this one are going to be like 64, 65, 66, and we'll take them one at a time, contained within those years. What we're doing in this one, in addition to drafting those years, is just sort of both these bands existed prior to 64. So, and another thing I should note real quick is that we know that the Beatles wind down in 70, but the members of the Beatles continue putting out important music over the next 4 years. So for the purpose of this podcast, the music that represents the Beatles during that period is McCartney, Lennon, Wings, Ringo, all that.
They all have solo stuff. Even Ringo has a prodigious output into the 1970s.
Yeah. And there's a ton of stuff worth talking about there. Some of which, quite honestly, I will be exploring for the first time. These two bands are worth talking about together, and a ton of their like most important periods overlap directly. But the Rolling Stones 70 to 73, 74 is, there's no scenario where you're not talking about that too. The music's too, just too legit.
Yes.
What's like, if you're just describing to someone their pre-64 career, like what was that like and where were they?
I mean, 63 is definitely the year that the Beatles kind of exploded onto the scene. And I think, you read the story of the Beatles. They are obviously in Hamburg, Germany, before they kind of hit it famous. And they were kind of doing that touring circuit and kind of getting their chops together. And a lot of these songs that they were playing, with the Beatles, with Please Please Me, their first album, some of these songs are covers, but a lot of these are originals. I think the Rolling Stones for a little bit longer were kind of playing more blues standards. And I'm probably not as well versed in the early years of the Rolling Stones and the formation of them. If anyone has like a really good book on the Rolling Stones that lays all that out, I'd love to read it. But I think it's fair to say to some extent that without the Beatles and their success, we may have never heard the Rolling Stones.
I was reading up leading this that in 1963, so this is pre-64, the guy Andrew Aldam finds the Rolling Stones, and this is a guy who had worked sort of marketing, managing like on the periphery of the Beatles, and basically like saw the Rolling Stones playing their like pretty, I mean, basically covering like very awesome blues music, but at the end of the day, you're still just covering blues music. And picked up the Rolling Stones and was like, hell yeah, like the lead singer's a sex magnet. These guys just have like, there's just energy here. There's something to do here. Straight up helped boot out the piano player who was like an older looking man who didn't.
Fuck you, grandpa. Get the hell out of here.
Yeah. And then and said that you can't have six members in a band because like teenage kids just looking to like get turned on. Can't count past five. And basically like said, like, I'm going to make a bad boy Beatles. I'm going to make a little documentary I watched, like talked about like a tough, sexually suggestive flip side to the Beatles, which honestly, dude, the guy did it.
Well, he did it. And that, I guess just the interesting part of that story is the fact that the Rolling Stones fulfilled, it was like a boy band in that sense of, when we were growing up and there was this sort of idea of like, yeah, just like go to the mall and like find five good looking guys and like teach them how to dance. And like you have like a super successful pop group. And it wasn't too far from that. I think the surprising part is that both of these bands and Keith Richards and Mick Jagger became such amazing songwriters. Yeah. And I mean, there's this whole period, it's sort of survivorship bias because there were hundreds of other bands that I'm sure people even adjacent to the Beatles were like, yes, these guys will be the, and no one's ever heard of them. So speaking of people that got kicked out of the band, I don't know that we're ever going to get to this or that necessarily be included in some of the later years that we're going to cover. But did you know that Pete Best, the drummer who got kicked out of the Beatles, did you know at one point in the 60s, he released an album called The Best of the Beatles, but it was actually just an album of him and like a band playing, but that was what the album was actually.
I deeply admire that hustle. that's not a, there's no lie in that title, right?
There is no lie. Show me where the lie is.
That is incredible. Yeah. All right, well, that's our Pete Best corner.
Yeah.
we'll talk about it in 64, but it's the Rolling Stones covering these blues songs, doing it well and doing it like with a whole lot of presence and magnetic energy. But like we'll get to it in 64, so I won't say much more, but like they have one original song on the album they put out in 1964, and it is so good and so different and so indicative of where they're going. I love that there's just this one song that's kind of like pointing you in the direction of this band that's going to be one of the most important bands ever.
Well, tell the people the song that you're
The song is Tell Me, and I'll talk a little more about it next week.
One of the downfalls of all these covers of some of the early Rolling Stones stuff is they just all sound the same. I mean, they fucking do, but they released an EP in January of 1964 that I've been listening to a ton that I really like. And they do a cover of a Coaster song on there called Poison Ivy that is just, I think it's as good as any of the other songs that the Rolling Stones recorded later in their career. So if you're interested in listening to some of that early Stone stuff. Poison Ivy, Poison Ivy. But there's just not a lot of pre-1964 stuff with them. So my question to you is, since we're in an argumentative, debative space, and since we don't have much Rolling Stones stuff to deal with in this pre 1964 time period, which Beatles album do you like better that came out in 63? With the Beatles or Please Please Me?
Please Please Me.
I'm gonna disagree. Please Me is probably more memorable. It has some more memorable songs in there, but I actually think With the Beatles is a better, more mature album.
Yeah, I think in 64 and then obviously in 65, those albums are like, they're maturing so quickly. Like they're leaps and bounds above this to me. Like this music is, these people have a sense of melody beyond comprehension. Like it's like how they write all these songs, how you end up with two people and then have George Harrison later writing too, and then even Ringo, like how you have all these same people in this same band writing these songs is just insane. But that said, like the dichotomy between them and the Rolling Stones right now is a huge gap between the two, because one is sort of riffing out real cool blues covers and one is writing the most sort of like saccharine candy music imaginable. She wouldn't dance with another.
Do you think they're saccharine? I don't think they're total. Like, so you just mentioned George Harrison and his first song. I don't know if it was the first song he ever wrote, but the first song that he wrote that's on a Beatles album is on With the Beatles. It's called Don't Bother Me. And it's actually one of my favorite Beatles songs. And the song is about how George Harrison just broke up with his girlfriend. And he's basically telling his friends and like other girls, like, look, I'll hang out with you again, but I'm heartbroken over this girl, so just leave me the fuck alone, basically. And it's actually a great song. So go away.
I honestly might have the wrong definition of saccharine, but what they are is immediately pleasing in their hooks. Basically, because
yes.
There's a lot of sad songs about that. I mean, basically like whatever, like early 1960s version of sad emo boy songs, like they do plenty of that. All right. So before we draft what year we'll be representing in the duration of this podcast, I want to ask you, which band do you think has a better band name?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. My instinct is to say the Rolling Stones, but I feel like it's kind of, they kind of get docked points because their band name is based off of a blues song, right? So it's kind of not super original, but I mean, this is 100%. Well, it's 100% objective. You know, I'm going this whole thing saying everything is going to be that this is the truth and reality of it. I'm just going to say the Rolling Stones. To be honest, as great as the Beatles are, the name The Beatles, kind of a lame name.
Yeah, I've ridden a little bit of a roller coaster in my mind since thinking of asking this question. And all right, Beatles, spelt with the word beat, incredibly cheesy in retrospect, but probably kind of fucking tight back then.
It's definitely better than if they had named it The Beatles without the A. Like that would have been worse.
Yeah. I don't even know if that's on the table though back then.
I can very easily like go to an alternate dimension in my mind where there's like a pop group from 1963 that just never quite like has that hit song, but you know, maybe flirts with it. It's popular in England and they're called the Beatles. And now we like laugh at them for that name.
I love the idea that before Nirvana became Nirvana, they had like pen cap chew and like these like vulgar names just written in notebooks. Like it just like, really? Would pen cap chew take, would that completely like shift the like trajectory of music in the 90s, a band called pen cap chew? I don't know. But then again, it'd be the same exact song. So who knows? Not to go, I don't want to run too far down that. All right, so here's a sub question.
Well, okay, one other thing I'll say though, before you get to that, is that another argument for the Rolling Stones is that the name is so versatile that Bob Dylan probably, surely at that point must have known there was a band called the Rolling Stones and was like, I'm still going to make a song called Like a Rolling Stone, because that's how versatile this like combination of words are.
That's where I'm going right now. That's
okay.
That's
I beat you to the punch.
Is honestly the Rolling Stones. I was going to dock the Rolling Stones points to the point of losing to the Beatles in this question for me.
Okay.
Except that the timeline is, all right, Muddy Waters song. Mm-hmm. Then Rolling Stones named their band in 1962. Bob Dylan writes Like a Rolling Stone in 1965. 100% he knows that band exists. There's no way that's not true. And then 1967, you get the first episode of Rolling Stone magazine. So like the culture spent the 60s just pounding the absolute hell out of a Rolling Stone gathers no moss imagery.
It was obviously very pliable.
Well, the Rolling Stone, to me, the Rolling Stones is a cool band name. I was basically going to dock them if they named their band that after Bob Dylan and Rolling Stone magazine, but I knew in my heart before even researching that wasn't going to be the case. A band naming themselves after something from a song that inspired them, that's great to me. That's totally fair game. All right, and now something we're going to do in each of these episodes is between the times when Ryan and I are kind of debating who had the better year of these two, we're going to get a third opinion on this, someone who's not sort of enslaved by the format of this podcast that we're putting ourselves through. And today, to be our sort of first example of that, is a friend of mine, Evan Daly, who is a super talented musician who plays in bands called Boot Juice, The Dirt Feeling, Negative Wookie. How you doing, Evan?
I'm doing great, Justin. How you doing?
Really good. I'm glad to have you on this first episode to talk about the Beatles and Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
All right. So at this point, Ryan and I have kind of gone over it. The Beatles have some collections of songs out. The Rolling Stones are really, really kind of just getting going. Mm-hmm. With that in mind, though, who do you got? Rolling Stones or Beatles pre-1964?
I tried to overthink this as hard as I could. Good. I really...
That's what this podcast is for, so... Do it.
Yeah, I tried to give as much credence as I could to the Rolling Stones as they were at the time and kind of where they were on their trajectory, and kind of give them a handicap somewhat against the fact that the Beatles were kind of just came out as this polished rocket ship of pop music, you know. I tried to be really fair, but at the end of the day, the decision is really easy to make, and it's the Beatles. Taking into kind of context of where the bands were, they were at very different points of their career. The Beatles had been working as a band in Hamburg, in the Cavern Club, had really built this really solid repertoire. And the Rolling Stones, they were, really creative, but they hadn't really legitimize themselves in the pop world yet. And so what they were doing on those efforts, they actually did two EPs I tried to give them a further handicap and look into 1964, and they did another 5-song EP later in that year. But even taking into all that into account, they had no original music on either of those EPs. The Rolling Stones is a band I've always kind of felt their appeal is more in their vibe of their groove and the chunkiness of their groove. And there's like aesthetic reasons why they're really palatable. But the stuff that the Beatles are doing on those just right away on the first record, Please Please Me. It's just a lot of really refined harmonic texture and really like intelligent note choices being used, and just a lot of thought and care to how they structure things, you know. And it's really, I mean, it's got a lot of high production value on it. And a lot of that has to do with George Martin helping them and producing them. And he's credited as the fifth Beatle in that way. Yeah. And he helped kind of make their music, and because he has this great compositional mind. And so on the Rolling Stones EP, you can totally hear the Rolling Stones and the vibe that they, you know, developed into their later records. But it also features Brian Jones, who departed very early on in the Rolling Stones career after his tragic death, the age of 27. And so there is a kind of remarkably different sound in that era of the Stones compared to my favorite Stones stuff anyway, just because without Brian and you add Ronnie Wood in there, it's the rhythm structure and how they were approaching their stuff is way different.
I think the way you put it, though, that it's more of a across the board vibe for the Rolling Stones is a good way to put it. Like, whereas the Beatles, you can basically point to a dozen like infectious choruses and whereas the Rolling Stones thing is more of like a thing that's washing over you, like as a whole, just like a general sound and feeling and all that.
Totally. And I as a quick AB. And in part of my handicap, I was trying to give the Rolling Stones, I said, I'm going to pick a song at random off of Please Please Me and compare it. And I'm going to use that as my standard to compare to the four songs that the Rolling Stones did. And the shuffle landed me on the title track, Please Please Me. And if you haven't heard it, listeners out there, just, I don't know why you're listening to this podcast if you haven't heard it, but you should go listen to Beatles' first record. It's great.
Last night I said these words to my girl.
There's like three different hooks on that song, and like it, and a great riff with the harmonica that doubles the vocal part, and cool chord changes that kind of step outside of the key for a second. And I thought, okay, well, the appeal of the Rolling Stones is this rhythm groove that they got going on. And especially on Money, their cover of, you know, Money, That's What I Want. You really feel the, you know, the Bill Wyman, Charlie Watt kind of just dum, 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 you know, really nice thumping kind of thunderous rhythm groove. But then you go to Please Please Me and Ringo is just playing all sorts of cool stuff all over that song. It's like, well, come on, man. Like, like Ringo, you know? So it just, the decision became easier and easier and easier to make just the more I was listening to it. I'm like, this is like, I don't think they were that developed yet. And they just had to kind of prove that they could play the hits. And then they became, you know, the great band that we know them as.
Well, any parting thoughts? I appreciate you being the first one. That's awesome.
Yeah. The parting thought is that, you know, being out of time of that era and being born in the later 20th century, and both those bands had already done pretty much all their impact on our culture and music at large. It was kind of interesting to put myself in that time and kind of try to feel that perspective. And I kind of started to go through the other years and do the AB, and it's really interesting. And I can't, you know, I'm excited to hear what you guys have to say about it.
Well, thank you, man. Take care.
I've got a feeling deep inside.
All right, so let's draft these. I'm gonna let you go first. So the way we're gonna do this, you pick the year you're drafting and what band you want in that year. So it'd be like such and such band in this year, and then we'll take that off the table.
And then that year is off the table, because if I pick one band, then that implicitly means that you have the other band. So we'll name the year and the band, but it'll only be one draft per year.
Yep.
So with the first pick in the first inaugural Beatles versus Stones draft, I will select the Rolling Stones for 1972, featuring Exile on Main Street.
That's a smart choice.
I have lots to say about that.
It's a smart choice considering what Exile on Main Street is, and a smart choice considering what's up against it that year.
Sometime in New York by John Lennon, and that's it.
never heard it in my life. It's gonna be a fun foray, and I can't wait to mount a case for how amazing it is.
Okay. I think that's actually also like a live album.
It's classic.
All right, you're up.
So what's off the table right now? 72?
72 is off the table.
All right, I'm gonna pick the Beatles in 1970. And that's basically the Beatles put out Let It Be, last album. McCartney puts out an album. George Harrison puts out an album. Lennon and Yoko Ono put out an album. And then the Stones have the live album, Get Your Ya-Ya's Out.
That is a huge, huge Beatles year. Okay, that's a smart choice. All right, with my next pick, I am going to take the Beatles in 1966, which is Revolver.
Bastard.
And the Stones put out Aftermath.
You know, could be a lot worse than that. All right, I'm going to take the Rolling Stones in 71. Which is Sticky Fingers versus Paul McCartney does Ram, the Wings do Wildlife, and John Lennon does Imagine.
Oh yeah. I am super stoked to be arguing on the side of Ram. That is Ram is my jam. So I'm happy to give you that one. Okay. Then I will take the Rolling Stones in 1967, which is Between the Buttons, Satanic Majesty's First Request, or Satanic Majesty's Request. I always call it the Satanic Majesty's First Request because the Brian Jonestown Massacre put out Second Request. Anyways, it's confusing. And then the Rolling Stones also put out an album, The Haze of Confusion of Different Countries Releases, called Flowers, which I think is different enough from some of the other releases with some of the similar songs that I'm including it. And then the Beatles put out Sgt. Pepper's Magical Mystery Tour, Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields. I feel like there's probably going to be some people right now who are like, wait, you just picked 1967 and you didn't pick the Beatles?
Yeah, I'm one of those people.
I'm going to tell you right now, I fucking hate Magical Mystery Tour. That album sucks.
I'm not going to defend Magical Mystery Tour too much, but to me, the sheer fact that you put out Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields in addition to all the good stuff that's on Sgt. Pepper, is not to say that one's perfect either, but I'll bring me to 1967.
Quality or whatever, we'll get into the specific debate when we get to 1967, but I'll tell you right now, I listen to their Satanic Majesty's Request a lot more than I listen to Sgt. Pepper's at this point in my life. But hey, that's just me. That's what this is for. All right, you're up.
All right. So I am going to take, so we got the 70s are largely coming off the table. God, 68 is so hard. White Album and Baker's Banquet. 69 is, I'm going to take the Rolling Stones in 69.
Let It Bleed.
Let It Bleed. I just really love Abbey Road, so that's not easy either. But I put Yellow Submarine lands around the same spot as Magical Mystery Tour for me, so.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you can't go wrong with any of these, but it's certainly going to be, I feel like we're lining up right now. That was actually the first one that you chose where you chose the band that I had chose for that year. So we're in sync with these as far as where we want to be on the sides of these arguments.
Nice.
Okay. Well, then I will take 1968 Stones, Beggar's Banquet. And you get to defend the White Album, which I feel like there's equal parts, the White Album, equal parts to defend and loathe. So
I could, that was one that I kept low on my little like list of notes because I could defend or kick dirt on it just as easily.
Now you're going to have to, because you have that year, you'll have to listen to Obla D, Obla Da 100 times.
All right. I'm going to take the Beatles in 1965 next, which gives me Help and Rubber Soul And then you have a misfit, the misfits of Rolling Stones number two, Out of Our Heads, Rolling Stones Now, and December's Children.
That's a lot of fucking work for me to do to figure out.
Dude, they do plenty of the thing where like the separate releases have overlap of the same songs, I think, in that collection.
Oh yeah, dude. Whatever. Quantity over quality in 1965 for me. Okay. Then I am going to choose the Beatles in 1973. The heavy hitter on there is Band on the Run by Wings. But there's an album from every Beatle in that year. So Wings has two albums. George puts out Living in the Material World. John puts out Mind Games. And Ringo has an album aptly titled Ringo. And the Stones put out Goat's Head Soup.
You know, actually, there's a lot to discover on the Beatles side, the Beatles solo artist side for me in that conversation. But Goat's Head Soup is an album I consider to be really good. Not as great as a lot of the music that came right before it, but feels like it's Goat's Head Soup versus Band on the Run for me there.
Okay, so there's 2 years left, 64 and 74 and beyond.
Yeah, I'm gonna pick the Beatles in 64 and then let you be the man to cast the like 74 and beyond vote.
Okay. Oh. Let me look at this list real quick. I think I'm going to take the Stones side for 74 and beyond.
Okay. So we're going to put these out once a week, starting whenever we launch it.
Can we have something more definitive than that?
We'll put these out once a week, starting in the new year.
There you go. That's pretty good. Merry Christmas, you filthy animals.
Exactly. All right, Ryan, I look forward to it. What's the Rolling Stone song that's going to play us out every time?
Well, baby, 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 you're out of time.
And then I'm going to fade in the real version right there.
Can we do that?
Oh, I can do that. Thank you all for listening. And yeah, we're going to keep these episodes all around like half hour to 40 minutes. And they're going to be 10 of them in total. So enjoy this during lockdown number two of this reality we're living in. What else you got to do? Thanks for listening to the first episode. You can find me on Twitter at CoxJustin, and you can email the show at BeatlesVersusStonesPod@gmail.com. The exact lettering of that is in the show notes, but it's a VS for the verses. Anything you send there, whether it's love letters or hate mail, will go to Ryan, who is smartly not on social media. This podcast is part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, which is home to a bunch of really cool music shows that you should definitely check out. And thanks to Pantheon sponsor AKG for supporting the show. You'll notice a step up in the sound quality in the next episodes and the whole rest of the series, and that is thanks very much to them. See you in 1964.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.